Coming up is the news.
Condemns Israel's assassination of the movement's deputy chief in Beirut as a complete act of terrorism and violation of Lebanon's sovereignty. Hezbollah warns assassination of Hamas deputy chief in Beirut is an act on Lebanon's sovereignty which will not go unanswered or unpunished. And people in Iran elsewhere commemorate the fourth anniversary of the assassination of anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News. A top Hamas official has been assassinated in an Israeli drone attack in the south of the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Saleh al-Aruri and several others were killed in the attack, which targeted an office of the Hamas resistance movement. Al-Aruri is one of the founders of Hamas's military wing and its deputy leader. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us earlier with more details.
It was definitely an assassination by the Israeli intelligence, and we heard from the Israeli media that they said that there is some sort of a security operation inside Lebanon. But here we're talking about the heart of the southern suburbs of Beirut. This is the place of the supportive ground of Hezbollah. Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah has previously said that any attack or aggression against Lebanon or assassination, whether it is a Lebanese official or a Palestinian official, and therefore Hezbollah would find it necessary to retaliate. This is in addition to another warning from Hezbollah Secretary General, who also said that an attack against the southern suburbs of Beirut would be also very equal to an attack on the capital, Beirut. And if we remember, in 2006, it was an equation that Hezbollah had put. If the Israelis do target the Lebanese capital, Beirut, and therefore Hezbollah would definitely target Tel Aviv. In 2006, they did not do so. Now, if we see this with the warning of Hezbollah Secretary General, who said that an attack against the southern suburbs of Beirut and not the heart of the capital, Beirut, would entail a retaliation against the Israeli regime, perhaps in the heart of Tel Aviv. Now, whether Hezbollah would consider that this is a time to retaliate through rockets or through another security operation. As you know, Hezbollah does have the intelligence, and they could probably also retaliate through another assassination against perhaps an Israeli figure, a military figure, the retaliation could be done against the Israeli army in South Lebanon.
The Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh says the Israeli regime's assassination of resistance group's deputy chief in Beirut is an act of terrorism and violation of Lebanese sovereignty. Haniyeh, who is the group's political bureau chief, noted the Israeli assassination of Saleh al-Aruri on Lebanese soil is an expansion of the regime's circle of aggression against the entire Arab nation. He said history has time and again shown assassination of resistance leaders will only render the movement more powerful and resilient. The Hamas leader said the Israeli regime will not succeed in crushing the determination and steadfastness of Palestinians and their brave resistance. Haniyeh added al-Aruri has left behind a long line of strong men who will continue to defend the Palestinian nation until the liberation of al-Quds. The reactions continue pouring in over the Israeli assassination of the Hamas deputy chief Saleh al-Aruri in a drone strike in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah called it a dangerous attack on Lebanon, its sovereignty, and its resistance. The movement also warned Israeli crime will never pass without response and punishment. Islamic Jihad resistance movement has also stressed Israeli crime will not go unanswered and that resistance will continue its fight until the complete defeat of the occupying regime. Iran has also reacted with foreign ministry spokesman strongly condemning this cowardly assassination. Nasser Kanani said assassination once again proves the Zionist regime is founded on terror and crime. Lebanon's prime minister has also condemned the assassination, saying the act aimed to draw Lebanon further into Israel's genocidal war. And now, as soon as the news of Ariri's assassination filtered through, people were out on the streets in Palestine and other countries in the region expressing anger and grief. Marches were held in Ariri's honor throughout the occupied West Bank, including his hometown, Arura, and also in Ramallah, Jenin, Al-Khalil, and Nablus. Demonstrators voiced support for Palestinian resistance and vowed to follow in Ariri's footsteps. And there are also protests in the Jordanian capital, Amman, where people gathered outside the Israeli embassy to condemn the assassination. And now, Ariri's last exclusive interview was aired on the 18th of December, and in it, he spoke about Israeli onslaught against the Palestinian people. Top Hamas official expressed confidence Israel can never eliminate Hamas, words that hold as true today as they did back then.
I do hear some of the Israeli leaders that the aim of this battle is to eliminate Hamas movement, as if Hamas is an army of strangers living in Palestine. Hamas is the Palestinian people. It is an essential, central, and the biggest part of the Palestinian people. In all electoral processes since 2006, Hamas won the majority of the seats, which reflected the people's trust in Hamas, because all its programs have been at the service of our people. All Israelis' attempts to distort Hamas's image and present it as an extremist, terrorist, and Daesh organization have failed so far. For
example, in the interview, the top Palestinian official also spoke about the strength of Palestinian resistance fighters, saying they're fighting for a just cause for which they are ready to sacrifice their lives. He was keen on stressing the strong will and determination is much more important than the resistance group's missiles and underground tunnels. That interview with Ariri was conducted in Istanbul by our correspondent, Rashan Saglam. Following the assassination, Saglam joined us to recount her experience of that interview and her impression of Ariri himself.
When I first was told that I will be interviewing Sheikh Saleh Al-Ariri, I felt like this is a responsibility. It's not easy to interview the second person in Hamas resistance movement. So I was really shaking and nervous. But when I sat with him as a person, he tried to comfort me. He tried to tell me that it is going to be going smoothly. Don't worry about it. And we were sharing what the questions are going to be about. One of these questions was actually about the Hamas leaders being a target of the Mossad, and what's been taking place, like Turkey is trying to actually threaten Israel if anything like this happens on its territories, and him, of course, moving to other countries, and the fact that he is actually like on the list of assassination by Israel. And he was really confident. He said, like, I am not afraid of death. He is someone who, you look at him, you see in his eyes that he was never afraid of death, that he knows that one day he is going to be martyred. And this is what he actually seeks, not only what he is actually waiting for. He actually seeks martyrdom. And this is what I think that all these resistance movement leaders, they seek martyrdom because they know that if they die, they're going to die for their own cause. They're going to die for a noble cause. So speaking to him about this, he was like very confident and strong. And actually, he said that he could, like, before the interview, many people, they told me that maybe if you don't go because he is on the list and he was threatened by the Israelis, and if you are in the same place with him, you could also be assassinated. But as a professional journalist, I wanted to do this interview, of course, for my career, for my curiosity, and because, of course, I wanted to meet Sheikh Saleh Al-Ariri. And now, right now, I am very proud that I did this interview. I was the last journalist that interviewed Saleh al-Ourouri. I'm very proud and I'm very saddened for his assassination.
January 3rd marks the fourth anniversary of the assassination of Iranian anti-terror commander General Qasem Soleimani. Iranians across the country poured into the streets to commemorate the event.
Families of martyrs and ordinary people have gathered here in central Tehran at Palestine Square to pay respect and homage to the lofty status and outstanding personality of martyr General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated back in 2020 on January 3rd as a result of the U.S. Drone attack. And still after 4 years, his memories are alive and people are crying for his loss. General Qasem Soleimani, at the same time, he was so strong and he was powerful and he was so brave. But at the same time, when it came to family, when it came to ordinary people, he was so kind. So people could not tell if that is exactly the same person, because against the enemies and the terrorists, he was quite a different face. And he was exactly a counter-terror commander. So we see that that's why, because of such charismatic faces, such a charismatic features and characteristics that he had, these people are here. Of course, over the past couple of days, we hear a lot about his lifestyle, also more and more narratives of his life. That, for example, he said that, "I did not want to carry weapons. I just carried weapons and fought the enemy, the terrorists, because of those women and also men that they had to flee their homeland because of the aggressions of the enemy." So he actually rushed to the battlefields in order to support those who were in dire need of his support.
General Soleimani is known as a national hero in Iran. However, his vision was not constrained to the borders of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In his will, he says that, "I picked up arms to fight for the oppressed people, for those who are facing injustice and are being killed brutally by the terrorists in the region." So this is the main factor that has turned General Soleimani into a, let's say, international hero, that through the region, Syria, Iraq, and other places, people are venerating him so highly. That's because he did not just pay attention to his country, but he paid attention to humanity, letting go of let's say, the nationalities, Iranian or non-Iranian, Muslim or non-Muslim, Shia or Sunni. His very, very, let's say, mission was to save people in the region and to eradicate those who are causing instability and horror. And that's the main factor that has made him so popular, that after 4 years, you are seeing thousands of people showing up, in rallies across Iran to just pay homage to this great man.
Tehran University has held a ceremony in honor of influential figures deemed as icons of resistance. 20 laureates were picked out of a short list of 150 prominent academics, journalists, literary figures, and activists that have directed their efforts towards introducing Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Our correspondent, Gisu Misha Ahmadi, has your details.
A unifying figure, no doubt, a role model and a symbol of hope, self-confidence, and courage. On his fourth martyrdom anniversary, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is a source of inspiration more than ever. The reason why Tehran University has decided to recognize and reward prominent figures with outstanding works focused on the top commander himself and his way of life, as freedom seekers worldwide, and in particular resistance fighters in Gaza, continue to look up to him and follow in his footsteps.
Today, the occupying Israeli regime and the Americans who were talking about destroying Hamas are sending messages and indirectly negotiating with Hamas about how to manage Gaza after the war and how to exchange prisoners. This all means that the axis of resistance has won this war, and once again resistance has paid off, the resistance that martyr Qasem Soleimani stood up for.
Martyr Soleimani is not just a person. Martyr Soleimani is a school of thought. It's important for us to see the world through his eyes and follow in his footsteps. That is why I have published a book, including my research on Martyr Soleimani's leadership style, that can be used as a reference for our future leaders. I believe we need more people using his methods in leadership for us to be successful.
The 20 laureates were picked out of a short list of 150 prominent figures who have made great efforts to shed light on the different aspects of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, both as a person and as a hero and the top commander that he was. In West Asia, many people who are fighting for freedom against global imperialism see their path to victory through his teachings and his way of life. And Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani will continue to be a symbol of resistance for generations to come. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Our correspondent in London, Amina Taylor, has spoken to Londoners about late Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani on the fourth anniversary, that is, of his assassination by the U.S.
His commitment was to bring safety and security to the whole region. And he saw what is happening in the Zionist state as an element which actually bringing insecurity, conflict, and is bringing it to all people. And he saw what happened in South Africa as a model that once we remove the apartheid system, then people could live in harmony. And he was committed to do that. And indeed, he set up the whole infrastructure for that to become a reality.
I think his greatest legacy is being able to bring together all different Palestine resistant groups together, like the Hamas, the Islamic Jihad, together with the Quds force, so that there was a coordinated effort and strategy instead of each faction working individually. And I think this has been instrumental today in Israel not being able to dismantle the resistance despite killing over 20,000 people.
The general had a significant role when it came to even defeating and helping against Daesh in Iraq and Syria, significantly in 2017. He was also the commander of the Quds Force, which also helped defeat the groups that were for Israel and obviously trying to defend Palestine. So his stance was pro-Palestinian and was always there to be part of operations for the Palestinians.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam. In the name of God, the all-compassionate, the all-merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. As a reminder, in a couple of episodes, we made you familiar with the views of Fred Halliday, who has made researches on international relations and West Asian issues. He said in his speech in 2008 that the Islamic Revolution has been the most modern revolution of human history and a totally non-violent development. Today, you will be hearing further of his views on the Islamic Revolution and the unmatched personality of the leader of this revolution, Imam Khomeini. We hope you'll enjoy it. Fred Halliday, in one of his interviews on Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution, says the legitimacy of Iran's revolution was to create an independent Iran. This country had never been a serious colony. It had rather remained semi-colony, and during the rule of the Shah, it was under the dominance of foreigners. Imam Khomeini brought back Iran's pride. Once he said that, we will rub the nose of colony to the soil. Halliday considers the Iranian people's resistance against bullying countries and despotic rulers, and also in the eight-year war, as an example of honor which was created among the Iranian nation and other Islamic nations after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The Irish thinker continues, in the Islamic world, despite hostility with Iran and the issues which were caused by Iraq-Iran war, the clergy gave the sense of honor to people and made them believe that they can defend their culture. They like to remain Muslim and have relation with the past of Iran and the Iranian literature and myths. Towards the end of his interview, Halliday refers to Imam Khomeini's effort to coordinate between different ingredients of the Iranian identity and calls the Islamic Revolution as a symbol of this coordination. In a speech in 1998, Fred Halliday pointed to Imam Khomeini's peerless traits in ruling the hearts and attracting people and said, Ayatollah Khomeini had a magical attraction and a mystic power which drew the people. Now, 20 years after the Iranian Revolution, many Muslims in the world praise Imam Khomeini as an honest man. I remember when he was discharged from hospital at the age of 83, I asked him, "How are you?" He said, "I'm fine. And I thank people who are concerned about me. This was the first time that I was lying on a bed." I think he was the symbol of simple way of living and morals that were very pleasant for people. Irish thinker Fred Halliday, impressed by the political life of Imam Khomeini, considers Islam quiet compliant with democracy and says, you can be a Muslim and free. Let me put forward a special issue on democracy, having elections and political parties. Those who hate Muslims say that Islam cannot be democratic, and some of the Muslim rulers say that this is a Western system and we don't want it. But these don't have anything to do with Islam. In general, I didn't find a contradiction between democracy and human rights with the Islamic culture. For your information, dear listeners, it should be said that what is preached in the West as democracy is 100% opposite what is practiced. A very simple example to show this contradiction is the way the French police and government are behaving with thousands of demonstrators who have taken to the streets of Paris and other cities for hundreds of Saturdays to protest against the undemocratic and anti-democratic laws in the country. This is France, the so-called cradle of democracy. Thus, what Imam Khomeini and his successor, Ayatollah Khamenei, mean by democracy is truly the rule of people and the sample seen in the West for decades. Anyway, Halliday enumerates five factors for occurrence of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. He names them as asymmetric expansion of capitalist economy in Iran, political feebleness of Shah's regime, broad coalition of opposite forces, prominent role of Islam and Imam Khomeini's leadership, and the altering international ground. Halliday believes that before the Islamic Revolution, there were two outstanding theories in explication of occurrence of the four major revolutions in the world. According to the first theory, revolutions, in spite of all domestic issues, are the outcome of external and global conditions such as foreign attack and undermining of the ruling system is the support for revolutions. The second theory maintains that revolutions are the outcome of political, economic, and social structures of countries, and individuals play little role in them. Yet, the Irish professor stresses that the Islamic Revolution in Iran nullified these theories. The Iranian Shah, Mohammad Reza, enjoyed the highest scale of support from foreigners, especially his master and closest ally, the United States of America, till the last day of his stay in Iran. On the contrary, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, enjoyed no support from any government or global power whatsoever. However, according to most experts of Islamic studies, such as martyr Ayatollah Mutahhari, what led to the triumph of the Islamic Revolution were three factors, namely, people's faith in God, unity of people, and the unmatched leadership of Imam Khomeini. The points to note in the views of Fred Halliday on the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini is that he differentiates between this revolution and the political Islam and the extremist and Salafi outlooks of the groups like Taliban and Al-Qaeda. He has found Iran is a country with a very old and deep-rooted culture and history. He maintains that Iran stands very high in the region, from the viewpoint of cultural, historical, political, scientific, and economic power. Halliday castigates those who try to compare Al-Qaeda with the Islamic Revolution and considers it very false. The Irish researcher believed that Al-Qaeda is not an offspring of Islam, nor even the past Arab world. It is rather an extremist violence. He said in a speech, "It is true that the ideology implied in the discourse of the Islamic Revolution and the stances of Imam Khomeini claim universality contrary to Al-Qaeda. The Islamic Republic never intends to invade other nations or murder foreigners. Imam Khomeini has mentioned the universal issues of the revolution to guide nations." Well, dear listeners, on that note, we have to wrap up this episode. Next time, we will continue with the view of another thinker on Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and on the eve of the blessed birthday of the Prophet's immaculate daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, let us hear some interesting words from this Lady of Light about the purpose of creation by God Almighty. He originated things, but not from anything that existed before them, and created them without examples to follow. Rather, he created them with his might and dispersed them according to his will. Not for a need did he create them, nor for a benefit for him did he shape them, but to establish his wisdom, bring attention to his obedience, manifest his might, lead his creatures to humbly venerate him and to exalt his decrees.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson: tricking, cheating, and dishonesty. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are certain acts that if performed, the hell of fire should be anticipated by the performer of such acts. What are some of those acts that result in us being faced with burning in hell fire? The Prophet of Allah, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, said, "Trickery, cheating, and dishonesty cause the fire of hell." Therefore, a true Muslim would always stay away from such acts. Otherwise, his iman and faith is not guaranteed by any means. Prophet of Allah says, "He who is a Muslim abstains from trickery and cheating." Brothers and sisters, such ethical and moral vices have a direct impact on our lives of this world and the hereafter. Sometimes we think that if we're doing something wrong in terms of cheating others or tricking others or being dishonest towards them, it is something that we will have to pay off in the hereafter. Now, while that is true, but this is not the complete truth. In a lot of cases, as a result of such vices and vice actions that we perform, God forbid, in this world, we also get punished in this world. Of course, the hereafter punishment is there, but even this life, this world, is endangered by such actions. We should never consider the guidelines of Islam for us to stay away from these evil actions to be light. We need to take them very seriously. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the topic of tricking, cheating, and dishonesty. And we said that cheating is something Islam does not allow us to do, tricking others or being dishonest towards others. It's not something, allowed in Islam. How would we know that an act is an act of cheating and dishonesty? Well, first of all, you need to ask yourself that if you were on the other side of the transaction, would you consider it to be a cheating and dishonesty or not? So put yourself in that position that your counterpart is. Secondly, Islamic Sharia defines the details for us. This is probably why Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, the first divinely appointed imam, has said, "O businessmen, first religious jurisprudence, then business." Then he repeats, "First religious jurisprudence, then business. I swear by Allah that usury in the Islamic community is more hidden than the trail of an ant on granite. Have your oaths accompanied with truthfulness. Businessmen are sinful." This is the hadith continuing. "Businessmen are sinful, and the sinful are in the fire, except those who take what is lawful and give what is lawful." Notice again, Imam Ali alayhi salam is saying, businessmen are sinful unless they take what is lawful and give what is lawful. So we know that by default, all the businessmen, in the light of this hadith, they are sinful, except for one category, and that is when you're not cheating, when you're not tricking, when you're not being dishonest. You are being fair in your transaction is the only way out of this.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
He was born in a village in the heart of the desert. At the age of 5, he became a shepherd in the village, a young shepherd who grazed sheep with his bare feet, and at night his mother would remove the thorns off his hands and feet with a needle. During the entire fall and winter, he worked hard and his hands were frostbitten due to severe cold. Every time the teacher hit him on the back of his hands with a piece of wet branch from pomegranate tree, and he would start crying out loud, his father would shout from the yard in his house, "Don't hit him. Have a little fairness. Qasem's hands are not dirty. His skin has become black." And as far as he could remember, he was always waiting for the spring to come to bring warmth with it. Even though his hands never fired a bullet, they prevented many hands from shedding the blood of innocent people. And after he fell, people in the world didn't shake hands warmly for a long time. A man with a bright future, with a stature to stand tall. Only a few people around Qasim knew the reason behind his sneezing and coughing. They were the effects of the chemical wounds he sustained during the Iraq-Iran war and intensified during the battle for the liberation of Aleppo. Hossein Purjafari, the officer accompanying Qasim, was one of those few people around him. He was a constant companion of Qasim since the war and knew very well that the hard part of the chemical complications for Qasim was not the coughing, but the painful blisters that covered his feet from time to time. The hiding of Daesh among the people made it difficult to clean up the houses in Bu Kemal. It was just as difficult to clean up other cities in Syria. In that situation, the resistance forces had no way to tell Daesh suicide bombers from displaced asylum seekers. The experience of seeing the behavior of Daesh had made the frightened people of the city think that the resistance forces were just like Daesh. Anyway, the city of Bu Kemal was liberated faster than expected, and it was handed over to the Syrian people. Qasim was waiting for the Iraqi popular forces to arrive. The forces were supposed to move from inside Iraq and the city of Qaim to that point and shake hands with them. Now the Iraqi popular mobilization was standing on its own feet. By cleansing Syria and Iraq from Daesh, American helicopters took the last Daesh remnants and their commanders in the twilight. Qasim was now more than a military commander. He was one of the most effective people in saving two Arab capitals and in creating the most powerful popular forces in the region. Just as he opened the door to the Russians to intervene against the U.S. in the war in Syria, Qasim was now everywhere. A few months before the speech, the head of the CIA had written him a letter of warning that a representative of one of the countries in the region was supposed to hand over to him. But Qasim refused to take the letter. The danger by the symbol of resistance was becoming more and more apparent to the U.S. He had consciously chosen a path in which both his life or death would be detrimental to his enemies. The symbol of resistance, who relentlessly moved towards crises, was heartened by somewhere else. In the Iranian New Year 1398, or March 2019, when a flood hit Khuzestan province, Qasim was there with his constant companion. Although Qasim had gone there to visit the area and help the people, the flood-stricken people treated him like a guest. Those days, one of Qasim's friends, during a meeting, gave him a suggestion. He said that Qasim had to stand for the next presidential election as a candidate because of his social status and his popularity. It was not the first time that Qasim received this suggestion, but Qasim's answer was clear. I'm a candidate for bullets.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Global Resistance Day. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Wednesday, 3rd of January, 2024, is the fourth anniversary of martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, the great commander of the IRGC Quds Force and the greatest commander of the fight against terrorism in the world. In view of this, the day has been dubbed as the Global Resistance Day. 4 years ago, a few hours after midnight, General Soleimani and deputy head of the Iraqi Popular Force, Hashd al-Shaabi, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandes, were murdered near Baghdad International Airport through a terrorist attack by the United States. General Soleimani was so mighty and popular in the region and the world that the news of his martyrdom instantly topped the media news in Iran, the region, and the world. We have prepared a two-part program on this occasion. The first part will be dedicated to a brief biography of him, the naming of this day as the Global Resistance Day, his role during the eight-year war imposed by the U.S. through its stooge, Saddam Hussein, and his indelibly great role in strengthening and uniting resistance groups from various nations against the U.S.-sponsored terrorism. Stay tuned, please. The 3rd of January is the fourth anniversary of martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, better known as Haj Qasem among his lovers both in Iran and abroad. This year's ceremonies are being held with the theme of Shahid al-Quds, meaning the Martyr of Quds. While the world is witness to unprecedented and the most heinous crimes in Gaza by the fake Zionist regime, the moribund regime is surely committing these crimes with the complicity and all-out support of the United States of America. What astounds every conscientious soul is the deadly silence of the bodies and organizations which masquerade as defenders of human rights. The resistance front has been in a fierce battle with the Zionist regime and its shameless backers, especially the U.S., since day one, however, people in different parts of the world, even in Europe and the U.S., have poured to the streets in big numbers to condemn the Israeli state terrorism and the American support for all crimes committed by the child killer regime. No doubt, the colossal support thrown for the Palestinian cause is a sign of the effect of the efforts made by the late commander of Resistance Front, Qasem Soleimani. Here, it should be noted that in 1988, the great father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, had accurately predicted just 1 year after the end of the eight-year imposed war that the war would result in the awakening of Europe and America. Who could imagine that one day people of London, Paris, Berlin, Washington, and elsewhere would take to the streets in huge masses, chanting the freedom of Palestine and the end of barbarity by the fabricated Israeli regime? This has turned into a common scene in the front of the White House and even in the presence of the US president. Martyr Qasem Soleimani became a member of IRGC immediately after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. He trained several battalions in the southeastern city of Kerman and dispatched them to the battlefronts in the war against Saddam's invading army. For a short time, Qasem Soleimani was the commander of the IRGC branch in West Azerbaijan province. Martyr Soleimani was appointed as the commander of Sarallah 41 Division in 1981. During the eight-year imposed war, he was among the commanders of operations Valfajr 8, Karbala 4, and Karbala 5. Karbala 5 was one of the most important operations of the Holy Defense, as it highly weakened the Iraqi Ba'athist army politically and militarily on one hand, and stabilized the conditions to the benefit of the Islamic Republic of Iran and its armed forces. This great commander went back to his birthplace, Kerman province, after the termination of the war and continued his struggles, this time against roguish elements who were guided and backed from the eastern borders of the country. Martyr Soleimani fought with drug traffickers on the borders with Afghanistan till he was appointed as the commander of the IRGC Quds Force in 2000 by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. As the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Martyr Soleimani proved his high ability and prowess in fighting Daesh and defending helpless people and the holy shrines of the Ahlul Bayt in Iraq and Syria. Thus, he defeated the intricate multi-sided plots hatched by the US, Israel, and some of the Arab regimes to tarnish and demonize Islam. In view of this, the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, Ayatollah Khamenei, honored him with Zulfiqar in 2018 as the highest military badge in Iran. This was to appreciate his selfless endeavors to cleanse the region and the world from the cancerous tumor called Daesh, or ISIS. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was the first and only commander to receive the badge. Ayatollah Khamenei said during the ceremony to grant the badge, "The struggles in the way of God cannot be compared and compensated with these things. What exists for a struggle in the way of God, an Almighty God, has determined it for offering and sacrificing the soul, and the property in the way of God is paradise and God's pleasure. Inshallah, Almighty God will reward him and favor him and will make his life with bliss and his end with martyrdom. Yet not now, the Islamic Republic still needs him for years, but may he end in martyrdom. Inshallah, it will be blessed for you." The great measures of Martyr Soleimani form a long list, as he had devoted himself to Islam and his country. Yet, his last feat was to make a bulwark against Zionists and the U.S.-sponsored terrorists via bolstering the forces' resistance front in different parts of the region. General Soleimani played an unforgettable role in strengthening the Palestinian resistance groups and the Hezbollah of Lebanon. The spectacular victory of Hezbollah during the 33-day war and Hamas' victory during the 22-day war were evidently indebted to his valor. The Syrian war was another front for proving Soleimani's fight against terrorism, and in fact he is best known for this unique act in thwarting the U.S. Zionist conspiracy against Islam and Muslims. Thus, contrary to what the U.S. and Israel wished, Syria survived and became much stronger than before. Alongside his efforts in Syria, Martyr Soleimani struggled against Daesh and other terrorist outfits in Iraq, liberating of cities and regions like Tikrit, Amirli, Mosul, keeping Samarra and Karbala safe against Daesh, and preventing the fall of Erbil were just some of his pivotal acts in Iraq. The Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammad Shia Sudani said, "The services rendered by Martyr Soleimani beside Hashd al-Shaabi to exterminate Daesh and maintain Iraqi security is the best example of brotherhood and friendship of the two nations, and it indicates that Iran and Iraq are moving together in the same path." Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, on November 21, 2017, wrote a letter to Ayatollah Khamenei, wherein he had announced the end of Daesh terrorist group-led's rule. This cancerous tumor had indeed been forged by the U.S., Israel, and their allies and lackeys in Europe and West Asia to tarnish the bright image of Islam and to destroy or at least weaken the resistance axis. In this letter, Martyr Soleimani points to the great role of Ayatollah Sistani in mobilizing the Iraqi nation against terrorists and also highlights the steadfastness of the Iraqi and Syrian nations and the pivotal role of the Secretary General of the Lebanese Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, in defeating the dangerous plot hatched by the global arrogance and Zionism. As the leader of the Islamic Revolution put it, "The dimensions of the character of this martyred commander should be viewed as an instructive course, way and school. It is then that the value and price of this issue will be clear."
Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Each week we evaluate a trending news story and we break it down from an Islamic perspective. The world, and in particular the Muslim world and the global south, is marking the fourth anniversary of the assassination of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani at Baghdad Airport in January 2020, a murder that took place on the orders of former US President Donald Trump and at the behest of the Zionist regime. On today's episode of Eye on Islam, we take a look at a man who for many represented the personification of bravery, masculinity, and faith in God, and in particular at how he interacted with the followers of other religions during the course of his life. First, we begin with a biography of the man who was known as the Shadow Commander.
Qasem Soleimani was born on March 11, 1957, in the province of Kirman, situated in the south of the Islamic Republic of Iran. At the age of 13, the young Qasem left school and began working on a construction site in a different town to help support his family financially. Over the course of the next decade, he also took part in revolutionary activities against the regime of the Shah. In 1979, when Imam Ruhullah Khomeini led the Islamic Revolution to victory, Haj Qasem joined the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Despite minimal training, he showed great talent and natural aptitude and rose up the ranks quickly. The following year, in 1980, when Saddam's Iraqi army invaded Iran, a 23-year-old Qasem joined the battle, and as a company leader,